Greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview. This is the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's good to have everyone with us. I think I should start with an update on the statement I made last week about the Green New Deal. Were you people paying attention last week? Were you paying attention last week, he said to his extremely attractive audio engineer. She doesn't remember, so I'll have to refresh your memory. I said the left introduces some outrageous, maniacally leftist, crazy idea, and then they back off a little bit, and then they slowly move us, lurch us to the left. Well, I was watching, what's his name? The guy who used to wear the bow tie. Why do I have a thing about him? Tucker Carlson is his name. I got a mental block about the guy. Anyway, he had a left-wing radio host, which seems like an oxymoron, obviously funded by some leftist institution because leftist radio shows never have survived on either sponsorship or just straight-up intellectual powerhouse thinking and talk like we have here. We don't need sponsors here. We have such powerhouse ideas. Says money is secondary, for crying out loud. Anyway, his name is Rashad Ritchie, and he actually said it. He confirmed my analysis of the leftist strategy when he told Tucker that the Green New Deal is merely a conversation starter, he said, a conversation starter, at which point Mr. Carlson had a conversation with him, which I would not have done. I would have said, listen, Rashad, I'm not willing to start a conversation there. I'm not even willing to have a conversation there. In fact, I'm going to call some mental health professionals to come and pick you up and put you in a jacket and the back of a truck. That's where you get off my show. But Tucker didn't. Tucker always puts the leftists and the homos on his show. I don't know what's up with that. He feels like he needs to give them equal time, or maybe does he think that makes him appear to be more open-minded? Anyway, Tucker, we don't need any of that, and we don't need a conversation about ridding the world of cars and airplanes. There's nowhere to start, Rashad. Go back to your left-wing radio show in Atlanta and get off my show. All right. Anyway. So, let's see. Now, you all are aware of the big news of the week. I don't have to go over the president's emergency declaration. You've got the coup confession from former FBI, whatever, McMuffin, whatever. That's from the Trump opera. So we don't cover the Trump opera. So we'll leave that. We'll leave that aside for Sean Hannity to cover nonstop for two straight years. No other topic on the planet. Hannity, Limbaugh, Levin. Have I missed anyone? What are the other clones? The Limbaugh bots. The Limbots. That's the main ones. The rest of them are all clones of them, which is even more embarrassing. They're all clones of Hannity, which that's embarrassing. Yeah. Uh-huh. Anyway, they all cover the Trump opera nonstop, and you barely even hear that there's about to be a showdown with Maduro in Venezuela, as there is U.S. aid now landed, medicine and food, and he won't let it across. And anyway, that's going to come to a head rather quickly. Glad to finally see somebody taking control of that situation. And then, of course, we got the Jussie Smollett hoax. It turns out that it wasn't a Grindr date. It was even worse than that, although I don't think there could be anything worse than a Grindr date. He actually hired these guys to beat him up so that he could, insult and smear white people, it looks like. Anyway. Why am I even talking about that? Let's get back to the emergency declaration, okay? So the president has declared a national emergency at the border, and he's going to get money for his wall, and everybody's convulsions. And but there's already been a declaration, ladies and gentlemen. I'm very disappointed that Donald Trump has decided that the hill he will die on is going to be his wall. Although I can't say I'm surprised. That was his main focus of his relatively illiterate campaign. So I can understand that he feels obligated. But, Mr. President, there's already been a declaration. You see, God declared that if you disobey me, you will be invaded, defeated, conquered, and carried away. That's what God has declared. And folks, I believe Donald Trump is a visceral, fleshly, temporal reaction to the you will be invaded part of that declaration that God made. That's what Donald Trump is. But that's not who we are. I'm not a big Trump fan. It's not that I don't hope he does well for the country. That's not it. I'm just not a big fan. I don't have the hat. I don't have the MAGA hat. Nope. Because I'm not part of that whole team there. I'm with the Christians. And we need to stand up for the if you disobey me part of the... Yes, that's what we need to stand up for. And that's what we'll stand up for here is the if you disobey me part. You can all be afraid of the Mexican invasion, and I don't like illegals crossing the border with typhus and all that either, don't get me wrong. But I'm more afraid of the if you disobey me part than the you shall be invaded part. That's all. I want to make myself clear. Hey, by the way, I forget when I watched this Rashad Ritchie on Tucker Carlson's show, but who was the Fox guest host on Friday night who came on after Tucker? He was guest hosting for Hannity, who I think Hannity was at Mar-a-Lago or something. I don't know. But who was that guest host? Maybe he looked like Adam Schiff crossed with Greg Gutfeld doing an impression of Pee-wee Herman. Can anybody help me with this guy? I don't know who it was. I had to turn the channel because... the person was physically revolting. So, but if anyone can go back and figure out who that is, well, just keep it to yourself because it really doesn't matter that much to me. Do I even mention the workplace massacre in Chicago? The slaughter of 5 people by a guy. Guy goes in to be told that he's going to be fired. He has to have a meeting with the boss, apparently. And he's told that his services are no longer required, right? So anyway, I don't know, 30 years ago, you know, he probably, even the most maniacal, angry person, at the worst, he would have slashed the boss's tires. At the worst. And that would have been inexcusable. But now he pulls out a gun and just starts shooting people. And slaughters 5 people, and it barely made the news. This may be the first time you're hearing about it. That was genuine workplace violence there in Chicago. But let's go from Chicago. We'll go to Manassas, Virginia, from the Man Bites Dog file. That's right. This story it's got a file of its own. The Man Bites Dog file. Last Tuesday morning in Prince William's County, the police were called. As citizens of Manassas said that there was a naked man walking around the neighborhood, which is still relatively unusual in Prince George's County. Well, the police showed up and they found Corey, a 31-year-old pothead, under the influence of an unknown substance. At the time, it was unknown. So they pepper sprayed him, which I just had to laugh. All right. And so after he got pepper sprayed, he bit an FBI agent on the neck. Indeed, he bit an FBI agent. The investigation later revealed that the young pothead had been smoking marijuana. Yeah. And for whatever reason, this pothead picked up his 5-year-old Labrador boxer mix. He picked the dog up and bit the dog on its ears and chest. And he went outside and pushed a 60-year-old lady down on the ground. How come nobody took out a nightstick and beat this guy? Anyway, this is just embarrassing. A little pepper spray. Should have thumped this guy upside his head. He's in a detention center now. And Well, there goes that old saw. That's the end of that one. Huh? Pot never hurt no dog, they say. Pot never hurt nobody, and it never hurt no dog. Well, it hurt this dog. And an FBI agent. All right. So there you go. From the Man Bites dog file. And now, speaking of dogs, let's go to the God's Awesome Creation file. Uh-huh. Yeah. Where over in Israel, I've got we've got Uri Bachman. He's a professional dog trainer over there in Israel. And he says his dogs can detect cancer by the smell of breath and urine samples. Yes. He says he's created a test utilizing dogs, sniffers there, that detects cancer at its earliest stage. And he says that the dogs can identify the characteristic sign of the smell of the disease. And he's designed the test. If the dog sniffs and then sits down, it means that the sample is suspicious. And the dog's been right. He's identified correctly over 500 cases of cancer. This is a dog just sniffing it out. It's pretty impressive. The dog even detected its own owner's breast cancer in its early stages. I think we did a story on this back when I first heard about that part of the story. Yeah. The dog has even received a medal from the government for saving so many lives. So, the closer we look at God's creation, the more amazing it is. And the more we examine the design of God's living beings and how they function, well, the more really cool stuff we're going to figure out. Like, just how does a dog smell cancer? Well, if we could figure that out, well, then we could probably figure out how to diagnose cancer at its very earliest stages. And we might not even need the dog's help. Well, we would have gotten the dog's help, wouldn't we have? So there you go. So anyway, that's just when you come out of a Man Bites Dog story about a loser pothead pushing a 60-year-old lady to the ground, you need something to lift your spirits, like Daisy, the cancer-sniffing dog. So thank you, Daisy. Yes. All right. Now, let's go from there. I'll tell you about, so I had planned to spend this entire weekend rewiring portions of my house because we've been having some really strange things happen here at the McBurney compound. We made a significant and sizable investment in these new LED light bulbs because written right there on the box, it said that they'll last for 7 years or more. And I thought, this is great. I don't like changing light bulbs, and they use significantly less electricity. I thought, what a win-win. Let's put LED light bulbs throughout the McBurney compound. Because my extremely attractive audio engineer, she likes really bright light. So you can get the LED that tries to imitate the incandescent sort of orange glow. Or you can get the daylight that bathes everything in bright white light. And that's what my extremely attractive audio engineer prefers. And so that's what I went and got for my blushing bride. And we installed them throughout the house just a few months ago. Well, over the past several weeks, they've been blinking and flashing and going out and coming back on and doing all kind of weird stuff. And so I've been on YouTube for I don't know how many hours trying to figure out why would light bulbs in these canister lights, which I'm not familiar with. I found out they've got a thermal control and a sensor, and you got to be careful with the insulation. You might not want to pile it on there. Maybe it can touch. Maybe it can't touch. I'm just going through tearing my hair out trying to figure out. I had one of the lights pulled out of the ceiling, crawled up in the attic, check all the wiring. Make sure there's no loose wires. Make sure the house not about to burst into flames. And then yesterday I stopped. And I said, wait a second. What if I just change the light bulbs? Is it possible? Is it possible that the 7-year LED isn't quite ready for prime time? Well, it is possible because I ended up merely changing 7 light bulbs. It was blown light bulbs. And here I am thinking that we are in a post-blown light bulb world. Well, guess what? We're not. We're not there yet. and I changed the light bulbs, and I got out of a very, very uncomfortable, unhappy situation, and I'm going to put that down as yet another home improvement win. Don't give up. Worldview. Thank you, Vito. Man, that makes you sweat just listening to that one. I got sweat on my brow. Yeah. The cool thing about that fella is that every guitar solo is like a composition in and of itself within the song. It's like a whole other thing. Really, guy's a really good player. Vito Bratta, Staten Island, New York. He's listed in the white pages. You could go to his house if you want to. I'm thinking to give a call and just see what he's up to. All right. Now, let's go to, where are we going to go? We're going to go to Yemen. No, not really. I wouldn't really want to go to Yemen. But we're going to go to a story from Yemen where, well, let's just get to, this is a criminal justice story. Wada Rafat and Mohammed Khalid. Two young men there were convicted in a court of abducting 12-year-old Mohammed Saad. They dragged him into one of their homes, and they molested him and assaulted him. They raped him. Now, they could not stop the child from crying out. The child was screaming and begging for help. So one of them grabbed a knife and slit the young boy's throat, killing him. So what, now I understand it's Yemen, okay? So let's just leave that aside. There was a full-on criminal court. I've done my homework on this. There was testimony. There was evidence. These two were guilty. They were, in fact, one of their relatives was also charged as an accomplice. And, so they were dragged out into the public square. They were laid down in the dirt on their face, and they were shot to death with machine guns until they were dead, is what happened. Which I think is a wholly appropriate execution for, a fully appropriate punishment, I guess I should say, for two kidnapping pedophile murderers. The female relative tried to help them dismember the child's body and hide it. And she was also convicted as an accomplice. Now, she did not participate in the actual murder, but she was convicted as an accomplice, and she has been sentenced to death. But her execution has been postponed because she is pregnant. So when she has the baby, she will be dragged out, laid down, face down in the dirt, and shot to death with machine guns, as she so richly deserves. And then hopefully the family will be able to take care of the innocent child. Now, I have a quote from Sarah over at Human Rights Watch. Human Rights Watch says, public execution is a grotesque violation of human rights. And then she goes on to question whether or not the pedophile rapist murderers had adequate legal representation. Probably, let's kill her. Probably, well, let's not go that far. My extremely attractive audio engineer is ready to lay Sarah from Human Rights Watch face down in the dirt there on a street in Yemen. And I do have that same visceral. Here's a story of one of the most heinous crimes you can possibly imagine. And this lesbian lawyer from Human Rights Watch, what is she concerned about? Did the accused have adequate legal representation? Yeah, it's just sickening. Anyway, I don't know about the whole laying them down face down in the dirt and doing it within 5 minutes of the conviction. I think we might have some sort of appeals process. But that process should last maybe 2 or 3 days. And then I would have let the kid's father decide how to execute them. He might have come up with something even more painful than the machine gunning in the back. But anyway, that's... So you have to go to a pretty far-flung place in the world these days to find anything resembling reasonable justice and appropriate punishment for some of the most heinous crimes that here in America we just tolerate. In fact, in Hollywood, they could have gotten a gig as producers. All right. Now let's go on to something not quite as heinous as that, but something pretty outrageous. If you've had a chance to see this, this is really astonishing. This Purple Heart triple amputee named Brian Kolfage. I mean, this guy lost both his legs and his right hand fighting for America. And every time he goes to the airport, the TSA treats him like he's got a turban on and he's screaming, Allahu Akbar! If you watch the video of what the TSA puts this guy through, it will make you physically ill. You'll have to choke back a little bit of vomit to get through the video. They grope him, they grab him, they touch him under his arms, they touch him in his crotch, and the TSA agent even rubs all up and down the guy, half the guy's arm that was blown off. It's disgusting and unbelievable. And then they swab his wheelchair, right, and put it in the machine like he's got a bomb in his wheelchair. It's unbelievable. What country am I living in? This is insane. Anyway, I was very grossed out, disgusted by this. I mean, I've been groped by the TSA, folks. I've been there. And it's not fun. But how they could possibly... All right, I guess I got to move on. That's all. Somebody film this. I'll put a link up. You got to watch the video if you could. It's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable. The people in the TSA are some of the worst, lowest human beings on the planet. That's all I can say. If you could do that and then claim that you're just following orders, then I know you would have loaded Jews into the oven back in the 30s. I know you would have. You're going to grope and swab and crotch and grab and just unbelievable. The guy's got prosthetic legs. He's missing his hand. He's got a veteran cat. I mean, come on, people. Anyway, somebody should be fired or quite possibly flogged over what happened at that airport. What airport was that, by the way? Did I even see? That was in Tucson. Oh, so I guess a lot of people are upset with this fella, this veteran. He's the one who started the GoFundMe to build the wall. I believe that's right. Do I have this right? Yeah, he. He's the one who raised all these millions of dollars to build the wall. So he's sort of famous, I guess. And it seems like government bureaucrats have it in for him for whatever reason. You would think the TSA would be in support of building a wall and border security and all of that. But I think they're probably just bureaucrats, mostly leftists, because they're related to other slackers in the government. And that's how they got their jobs. And so birds of a feather, right? They're all leftist leaning bureaucrats. And anyway, just that was disgusting. Now let's go to the Mark of the Beast file, where a Bronx city council member is being ordered to take the Mark of the Beast, and he is saying no. That's right. In fact, he is accusing the Bronx city council of, quote, being controlled by the homosexual community, unquote. That's right. And then the people on the Bronx City Council got very upset, and they've demanded that he apologize. Mr. Ruben Diaz Sr. is his name. And he's accused the city council there in the Bronx of being controlled by the homosexuals. And that led the city council speaker, the leader of the Bronx City Council, to call on Diaz to apologize. The city council speaker is Corey Johnson, and he's a homo. Uh-huh. So is the Bronx City Council controlled by the homosexual community? Well, the speaker is a homo. So you do the math. Yes, obviously, it's controlled by the homos. And who knows what other kind of deviant perverts up there. Anyway, Diaz Sr. is, he is a Pentecostal minister, and he opposed same-sex marriage, and he has been criticized for numerous past homophobic statements, meaning I would like to sit down and have a drink with this fella. I'm sure he's a fine guy. Anyway, he got himself onto the city council, probably to try to save the Bronx from the pits and the fires of hell. And he found out that the city council is run by the homos. And there pretty much ain't nothing you can do to save the Bronx, buddy. It's on its way to hell in a handbasket and a cutely decorated homo handbasket. So there you go. But we appreciate city councilman Ruben Diaz not bowing his knee and taking the mark. In fact, standing up and saying no. Now, in fact, we got another one here from the Mark of the Beast file. Yep. We go to West Virginia for this one, where a lawmaker there, a delegate Eric Porterfield has publicly called the gay community a terrorist group and has compared the LGBTQ activists to the Ku Klux Klan. I love it. Yes. So Eric, of course, everyone is freaking out that he would say this, of course. Here's what he said. I've got a quote from Mr. Porterfield himself, who, by the way, he is a blind, born-again Baptist missionary, right? He says the LGBTQ is a modern-day version of the Ku Klux Klan without wearing hoods with their antics of hate. He said this in an interview in front of God and everybody and where the homos could hear him. And so they are freaking out. We've got a statement here from Chairwoman Belinda. She's the chairwoman of the West Virginia Democrat Party. She's the chairwoman, Belinda. She says, quote, West Virginia has no room for someone who expresses such hate, let alone room for him to hold public office, where he is supposed to represent the people of West Virginia. Well, I'll tell you what, Belinda, maybe he does represent the few normal people left in West Virginia who are just about sick of seeing the homos pour out of the closet. Not only pour out of the closet into the gay bars, now they're running the government and the schools and everything else. And finally, there's starting to be a little bit of backlash. People are standing up and saying, wait a second, these homos make me sick. I don't need none of this. Not to be left behind, the Republican Party has also condemned Porterfield. Now, is Porterfield, I didn't look in here to see if Porterfield is a Republican or a Democrat. They say he was elected in November. I don't know. So chances are he's a Democrat. But the Republican Party came out to condemn him. We have a quote. Chairwoman Melody over there at the Republican Party said, we denounce him. Well, that's great, Melody. That's just fantastic. I'm sure that really bothers a blind Baptist missionary. I'm sure you're really devastating his self-esteem. Anyway, we want to thank Delegate Eric Porterfield for pointing out to everyone that the LGBTQ mafia is an intellectual and spiritual terrorist group akin to the Ku Klux Klan. Absolutely. They're a lot like the Ku Klux Klan, because the Ku Klux Klan used to keep certain communities living in fear all the time. The fear that they might show up and burn your house down or destroy your career. And so now you've got the same thing, except they no longer wear the white hoods and they don't burn a cross in your yard anymore. No. Now they wear their pajamas and they flame you out on Twitter, and then MSNBC and Fox News and ABC and CBS and all the rest, they do the job of burning down your career. Why don't you grow up? Whoa, what? I almost started singing along there. I couldn't help it. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. I may not have mentioned that the ruling left and their media cohorts out there in West Virginia have officially called on Delegate Eric Porterfield to resign. Yes, that's because the ruling left and their media cohorts are always standing ready to burn a rhetorical cross in the front yard of anyone who does not take the mark. And Mr. Porterfield has not taken the mark. And that could cost him, temporarily, in a secular sense. But in the long run, Mr. Porterfield, you'll be well served by pointing out the terroristic Ku Klux Klansian nature of the LGBT mafia. Now, we're going to bounce off the LGBT mafia, and we're going to get away from that for a little bit. We're going to go to the True Repentance File for a story that I am shocked in a good way. I am pleasantly surprised that USA Today published the story of this, a man who was diagnosed with gender dysphoria at the age of 40 and was diagnosed with other psychological issues due to childhood trauma at the age of 50. Anyway, this fella, he publishes his story about transitioning to being a woman. He says his grandmother used to cross-dress him as a little kid. She made a dress just for him, and she used to put him in it and tell him how pretty he was as a girl. Okay. That's pretty weird. Anyway, Grandma, she might have been a drugged out hippie back in the hippie days, for all we know. Anyway, he says that this planted a seed of gender confusion in him at a young age, and he ended up transitioning to female. He went tranny at the age of 42, and he lived as a tranny woman for 8 years. And during the time shortly before his transition, he was diagnosed with all these problems. He realized that he was a mess. And after a lot of counseling, he came to grips with the fact that just before he was 10 years old, he was abused by his uncle. And this, now he doesn't go into the details, but the abuse, he says, made him not want to be a man any longer. So we can imagine what that was like. And so this transgendered identity for him became an escape. And he actually went through with it. And he said at first he was excited to be a tranny because he said it's a fresh start. I could start a new life. I could stop being Walt and I could break away from my painful past. The fella's name is Walt. He didn't want to be Walt anymore. He didn't want to be a man anymore. But shortly after he started transitioning into this wonderful, happy new life, well, he says reality set in, And his wife and children were devastated by this idea that he was going to transition. I can imagine. I can imagine they were. It has to be devastating. Can you imagine? I can't even comprehend. Anyway, he says that and I'll quote him here. He says the reprieve I experienced, and that is from his trauma, from his pain, from his mental. From his mental devastation caused by the abuse. He said the reprieve I experienced through surgery was only temporary. Hidden underneath the makeup and female clothing was a little boy hurt by childhood trauma. And I became deeply suicidal, says Walt. He says nothing made sense after a while. He realized he wasn't happy being Laura. That was his tranny name, Laura. And he realized he had a strong desire to once again be Walt, to be a man. And so at the age of, at having transitioned at 42, at the age of 50, he had the implants removed. And he started undergoing detransition. I don't even know what you call it. At the age of 55, he says he was off the hormones. And he finally says he was free from his desire to live as a woman. Changed all of his legal name and all of his documents back to Walt. He became Walt again. And he goes on about how he regrets this, what he calls a gender detour that cost me 13 years of my life. He says, eventually, after I became a man again, I met a wonderful woman. We've been married for 21 years. Now we help others whose lives have been derailed by sex change. It's very encouraging that... that USA Today allowed this to be published. It's really surprising to me. It does help me realize that there is some hope. There are some people out there who haven't completely lost their minds. In fact, I think this whole tranny obsession is fueled by an extremely small group of people intent on making everyone else feel like you're a bigot if you don't go along. And since most people lack the courage of their convictions because they have none, because they're godless, they just go along with it. And the hysteria could disappear in a moment if people just stopped and said, wait a minute, tranny, that's crazy. That's sick and disgusting. But we'll see if we ever get to that. I mean, I'm here saying it every day, I'm trying to lead the pack here. Anyway, listen to what Walt has to say about the prostitutes, really, the media prostitutes who are pushing this transgender hysteria. He says, quote, had I not been misled by media stories of sex change success and by medical practitioners who told me that transitioning was the answer to my problems, I wouldn't have suffered as I have. He says, genetics can't be changed. Feelings, however, can and do change. He says, my email inbox is full of messages from transgender individuals who want the life and body back that was taken from them by cross-sex hormones, surgery, and living under a new identity. After detransitioning, I know the truth. Hormones and surgery, they may alter appearances, but nothing changes the immutable fact of your sex, says Walt. And Walt has been there and done that. So that's the true repentance file, and we're glad to have Walt back on this side. And it's too bad that the stigma against transgender mental disorder has vanished, and now it's something that's celebrated, because there's a lot of young adults who are going to go through what Walt went through, and a lot of them will not survive. A lot of them will commit suicide. Oh, by the way, that reminds me, I wish I had a way on my website to start a pool. Because I would like to start a pool where we could all pick how long it will be before Jesse Smollett attempts suicide. I'm predicting it's within the next 2 weeks. Now, it won't be serious. It'll be the old scratches across the wrist and screaming for help. Or he'll go out and he'll lean out on a bridge or a window or something. It's not going to be a serious attempt. But I can see a suicide attempt in the cards for Jesse. Is it Jesse or is it Juicy? It's Jesse. Anyway. Why am I even talking about that? I don't know. All right. Let's go to the domestic tranquility file, ladies and gentlemen. So, for approximately 5,000 years of human history, adultery was a crime punishable by the law. And it has been decriminalized now, I don't know, for about 50 or 60 years, most states. And because of that, the state of marriage and fidelity and true love is on the rocks. And it's getting uglier and uglier every day. We go to Missouri, where a jailhouse nurse has been charged with murder. Yes, Amy Murray was arrested last Thursday in connection with the December death of her husband, Joshua. Yep. Police say that she set the couple's bedroom on fire and took off with her 11-year-old son and the dogs to go to McDonald's while the house burned down around her husband's dead body. And now she told police that she was shocked to find the house on fire when she returned, but police were not as shocked as she was because they say the fire was set intentionally, and the autopsy indicated that Joshua had been poisoned to death before the fire began. Yes, this is the state of domestic tranquility in America today. She poisoned him with antifreeze and then burned his body in the house. After further investigation, police discovered that the wife, Amy, who was a nurse at a local correctional center or a prison or a jail or something like that, had been having an intimate relationship with an inmate who she planned to marry. So, right? It's so bizarre, right? So she wants to marry a prisoner. I don't know. I guess if adultery were a criminal act, she probably never would have considered having the affair, number one. But, you know, now that we live in a society that tolerates infidelity, celebrates infidelity, tolerates and even celebrates the shedding of innocent blood. If you're interested in having an affair, instead of just leaving your spouse, maybe you just kill your spouse. It's certainly more prevalent now than it was before adultery was decriminalized, and that's why we call on. Now, you've all heard me say that homosexuality is a crime and it should be punishable as a crime, and I do believe that, but I believe before we even go after the homos, we should recriminalize adultery. Because adultery is as corrosive, if not more so, than rampant fornication by the homos. So, anyway, sexual immorality is criminal, especially adultery. And a lot of people get killed because of it. Here's just another example, right? And so there we do. This is our obligatory call to recriminalize adultery, which we've made approximately 7,000 times on this show. And who's listening? Well, you're listening. But are any of the members of the proctocracy and the ruling left, are they listening? No, they're not. They're too busy trying to seduce their friends' wives and boyfriends and husbands. That's what they're all about. People like Andrew Cuomo. Andrew Cuomo. Yeah. That's from the personhood file. Queens man was arrested last Friday because police suspect that he killed his pregnant girlfriend. Cuomo did? No, not Cuomo. No. Well, not as far as we know. As far as we know, Cuomo's never killed anyone with his own hands. So, but this fella, he killed his pregnant girlfriend. And in New York, if you kill a pregnant woman, you're also charged with felony abortion. That's what you're charged with in New York. If you kill a pregnant woman and the baby dies. Well, after processing him through for a little while and taking a look at Andrew Cuomo's new abortion law, the district attorney had to send out a press release saying that, at first he sent out a press release saying that this killer would be charged with second-degree abortion as well as murder because he fatally stabbed Jennifer Irigoyen to death and her baby died. But then a DA spokeswoman later had to trot out in front of the newspapers and say that the abortion charge had to be repealed because the legislature passed the new law that you could pretty much kill just about anyone, anytime, is about what the law says. I mean, it's focused on children, late term, born, possibly unborn, maybe the foot or the hand came out, maybe they crown, So pretty much you could kill just about anyone anytime. And so we're waiting to hear if the murder charge is repealed, which is quite possible in the state of New York. Anyway, Cuomo signed this act. What is the RHA Act? I don't know what this is. I don't know what the letters stand for. The RHA, Real Hate Against Unborn Children, I guess. I don't know what it is. He signed it into law on the 46th anniversary of Roe versus Wade. It removes abortion from the state's criminal code and puts it into the category of public health. There we go. That's appropriate for Mr. Cuomo and the deviants and the perverts running New York, is that murdering people is now a public health accommodation. That's, anyway, they say, now listen to this. They say that the RHA, this act, faced fierce opposition. Fierce it was. With the New York State Catholic Conference, yes. What was the Catholic Conference upset about? In their fierce, fierce opposition. They said, quote, "This act removes accountability for those who would harm unborn children outside the context of medical termination of pregnancy." So the Catholic Conference, in their fierce opposition, acknowledged the right and the dignity of a medical termination of a pregnancy, is what they did. And so, I mean, Cuomo's office says they didn't comment on the murder case. Of course, why should he comment? I mean, not only did he win and he passed his right to butcher children on the table, he's got the Catholic Conference agreeing over the dignity and rightness and goodness of medical termination of pregnancy. So, Cuomo, why make any comments? He's the victor at the moment. And this is a very brief, short moment in time, Mr. Cuomo. This is a very brief and short period in eternity when you can light up your buildings pink and celebrate the shedding of innocent blood. You have yourself a good time, Mr. Cuomo. It's going to be a really, really short time. And hell lasts a long, long time, Mr. Cuomo. Hell burns hot forever, Mr. Cuomo, and it is getting excited just for you. Go, Andrew. Move along. Go, go. You know where you're going. Mario, you can join him. Who's the other one? Fredo. Chris. There's the off-ramp right there, buddy. Oh, you just missed it. Just missed that last one. That's right. That's right, Andrew Cuomo. When you, when you lit up the Empire State Building with pink lights to celebrate killing innocent children, God looked down and he reached over and he grabbed a hold of his eternal damnation poker and he just stirred up some coals for you, buddy. He stirred them up nice and hot, just waiting for you. All right. Now, speaking of bloodshed and murder, let's see, where is I had, so here's another one, folks, from the Domestic Tranquility File. There was another massacre this week that nobody heard about. Five members of a Texas family, including a one-year-old girl. Yeah. So their father sat at a bar most of the day and posted cryptic messages on Facebook. And then later the police found the bodies of the father, Randy Horn, his 27-year-old wife, Ashley, the infant, the couple's infant daughter, and the wife's grandparents. I'm sorry, the wife's parents, Carlos and Linda. Yeah. Unbelievable. So five people slaughtered in a story that it's a family detonation, and it should shock the whole world, and everyone should stop and their jaw should open slack, and they should be astonished at the violence. But it barely made the papers. Just because, you know, we've got to cover that all-important breaking news on the Steele dossier. Have you heard? While the streets of America are running with blood. Got to update you on what happened with the Steele dossier. This is just horrible. Friends of the family said that they'd been married for 2 or 3 years, but the wife was planning on leaving the husband. So, domestic tranquility. In the meantime, an up-and-coming young country music singer was murdered by a group of teenagers that includes a 12-year-old girl. They say that he was just a random victim. None of the five individuals arrested for killing him knew him, and he was a stranger to them, according to police. Uh-huh. But they were not strangers to the police. The police knew who all of them were. Diamond Lewis, 15 years old. Rania McKnight, 14. Decarius Wright, 16. And a 12-year-old girl and a 13-year-old boy. Anyway, the country music guy, his name is Kyle Yarlitz. I'm not familiar with him. He's only 24 years old. They walked up on him, pointed a gun at him, demanded his wallet, which he gave them. And then they demanded his car keys, which he would not give them, so they shot him to death. The New York Post says that the young killers had been stealing guns from vehicles for months. And earlier in the article, it says they were well known by the police. But apparently they were purposely forgotten by the lawyers and the ruling left there in Nashville. The ruling left of any town USA, really. I mean, they've all perpetrated a coup d'etat upon our states and upon our counties and upon our cities and upon our towns and upon our alleys and upon our back porches. The ruling left must be torn down and defeated and destroyed. And they will be one way or another. It's the admonition I gave. Well, I didn't give it. I mean, God said it. If you disobey me and you forget me and you put me out of your mind and you ignore my law, you will be invaded. Your children will be dashed against the walls. You'll be carried away as slaves. Your women will be ravished and murdered. Your young men will be killed or enslaved. So before that day comes, the ruling left must be torn down. This sort of violence should not be tolerated. And from there, we'll go to reason number 1,190 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. Certain schools are beginning to hire combat veterans with automatic rifles to protect students. Yes. And I know, Ted Nugent's probably pumping his fist going, yeah, all right, we'll protect our kids. Bring in the machine guns. As he shoots an antelope, sticks their heads on his wall. Anyway, so the folks, just a memo to parents. if your school administration is considering hiring military veterans with combat experience with live ammo in machine guns, you might consider pulling your kids out of the government schools. That's all I'm saying. If the environment has degraded to that level where they say, okay, we want you to be able to automatic weapons with combat experience, maybe I don't want my kid going there. And not because the veteran might do something. It would just be a sign to me that things are not so good there. I mean, the administrators feel like they need automatic weapons. So doesn't that raise a red flag with anyone? Anyway, this is the principal at Manatee School for the Arts in Palmetto, Florida. He says if any intruder comes into our school, they'll be met with swift, overwhelming, and deadly force. He says we'll put them down as quickly as possible. And I suppose that's all well and good. I mean, I guess it's better than sitting around, live streaming on Facebook while the children are massacred. But me and my family will follow the Lord. We're not going to take our kids into a godless school system that's become so corrupt and so violent that we feel like we need automatic weapons, okay? We're just not going to do that. We have a quote here from a senior. He says, one of the seniors at the school, an 18-year-old young man, says, he says, now I get that. Now the message has come across. No one will come and try to threaten the school. Okay. But young man, who will protect you from the perverts and the godless heathens occupying the teacher's lounge? I mean, the guy with the machine gun is the least of my concerns. It's the one with the glasses and the pencil, right? And the biology textbook that you need to be protected from. And no amount of firepower is going to protect you from that. So you just need to get, if you get your kids out of the public schools, if you don't, you're sinning against your children. And you're sinning against God. And if your grandchildren are going, get your grandchildren out of the government schools before it's too late. Before their minds are completely inoculated against truth, righteousness, and the gospel. Anyway, get them out. Let's see, what do we have? Oh, we got to go to El Chapo. Got to go to El Chapo. El Chapo was found guilty. Joaquin El Chapo Guzman, the head of the notorious drug cartel, is going to be sent to, well, they think he's going to be sent here to Colorado, to Florence, in what they call the Alcatraz of the Rockies. Yes. And the U.S. attorney says of the maximum security facility there at Florence, Colorado, they call it the ADX. The ADX, he says, it's a sentence. El Chapo has received a life sentence from which there is no escape and no return, says the U.S. attorney. He's quite confident in himself. He says if ever there were an escape-proof prison, it's the facility at Florence, Colorado. He says it's escape-proof. Now, I just read a story about how they're building a replica of the Titanic in China, an exact replica. And I read that the same week that the U.S. attorney comes out and says that the facility in Florence, Colorado is escape-proof. I don't know that I would go so far as to say that, Mr. U.S. Attorney. But listen to how horrible this is. Inmates at the ADX in Florence are held alone 23 hours a day in a 7-by-12-foot cell. They spend years in solitary confinement and often go days with only a few words spoken to them. One former inmate called it, quote, a high-tech version of hell designed to shut down all sensory perception, unquote. They live in a concrete cell. All of the furniture is made of concrete. They have a 4-inch window, and human interaction is virtually non-existent. Talk about cruel and unusual punishment. I mean, that's meaner than God. I know, sometimes I get annoyed with people who are nicer than God. But these people are meaner than God. God would never punish someone like that. That's worse than you do to a vicious dog that you were just trying to keep from biting the children. Anyway, there's all these horrible people there. Ted Kaczynski, Dzhokhar Tsarnaev, Zacharias Moussaoui, one of the 9/11 conspirators, Terry Nichols, Oklahoma City bomber. And they say that El Chapo should have been sentenced to death I mean, the guy probably imported enough drugs into America to kill every man, woman, and child on a planet. So he should have been put to death, but instead he's going to be treated worse. Well, anyway, he's going to be treated worse than God would treat him. We should have handed him right over to God, is what we should have done. Anyway, so the one thing Mr. U.S. Attorney doesn't realize when he says nobody's ever escaped or it's escape proof or all of this, well, none of these other fellas, Kaczynski, Tsarnaev, Mousawi, Terry Nichols, none of those guys have billions of dollars and a paid army on just waiting for the go-ahead to invade the prison. And so I'll make a bold prediction on this show right now. I believe that El Chapo Guzman will break out of Florence and will escape to Mexico. That's my prediction. And it's not, and it's mostly because of corrupt officials from everywhere from Mexico City all the way to Washington, D.C., who Guzman and his drug dealer cartel have in their back pocket. And also it'll be because of this, because El Chapo will read this and then he'll say, oh, okay. And El Chapo, see, he's a bad guy. So anyway, my prediction is he busts out. And I'm not going to make any predictions on the Chinese recreation of the Titanic. I think that one pretty much speaks for itself. So although they did make it to the far side of the moon. I mean, if you believe in any of that. If you even believe the moon exists. I mean, can we all agree on that? Maybe, maybe not. All right, I think that's it. I'm getting a little punchy. This is the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank you all. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com and at American Right to Life. And, of course, my other brother, Darryl, who makes it all happen. Here at the Weekly Worldview Studio, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.